Chapter 19.
Between feeding and caring for Billy, doing the housework, making plans, and selling her store of pretty needle work, the days flew happily for Saxon. Billy's consent to sell her pretties had been hard to get, but at last she succeeded in coaxing it out of him. "It's only the ones I haven't used," she urged, "and I can always make more when we get settled somewhere." What she did not sell, along with the household linen and hers and Billy's spare clothing, she arranged to store with Tom. "Go ahead," Billy said. "This is your picnic. What you say goes. You're Robinson Crusoe and I'm your man Friday. Make up your mind yet which way you're going to travel?" Saxon shook her head. "Or how?" She held up one foot and then the other, encased in stout walking shoes which she had begun that morning, to break in about the house. "Shanksmere, eh? It's the way our people came into the West," she said proudly. "It'll be regular trampin', though," he argued. "And I never heard of a woman tramp." "Then here's one." "Why, Billy, there's no shame in tramping. My mother tramped most of the way across the plains. And most everybody else's mother tramped across in those days. I don't care what people will think. I guess our race has been on the tramp since the beginning of creation, just like we'll be, looking for a piece of land that looked good to settle down on." After a few days, when his scalp was sufficiently healed and the bone netting was nicely in process, Billy was able to be up and about. He was still quite helpless, however, with both his arms in splints. Dr. Huntley not only agreed, but himself suggested that his bill should wait against better times for settlement. Of government land, in response to Saxon's eager questioning, he knew nothing, except that he had a hazy idea that the days of government land were over. Tom, on the contrary, was confident that there was plenty of government hand. He talked of Honey Lake, of Shasta County, and of Humboldt. "But you can't tackle it at this time of year, with winter coming on," he advised Saxon. "The thing for you to do is head south for warmer weather, say along the coast. It don't snow down there. I tell you what you do. Go down by San Jose and Salinas and come out on the coast at Monterey. South of that you'll find government land mixed up with forest reserves and Mexican rancheros. It's pretty wild, without any roads to speak of. All they do is handle cattle. But there's some fine redwood canyons, with good patches of farming ground that run right down to the ocean. I was talking last year with a fellow that's been all through there. And I doggone, like you and Billy, only Sarah wouldn't hear of it. There's gold down there, too. Quite a bunch is in there prospecting, and two or three good mines have opened. But that's farther along and in a ways from the coast. You might take a look." Saxon shook her head. "We're not looking for gold but for chickens and a place to grow vegetables. Our folks had all the chance for gold in the early days and what have the gut to show for it?" "I guess you're right," Tom conceded. "They always played too big a game and missed the thousand little chances right under their nose. Look at your buck. I've heard him tell of selling 3 Market Street lots in San Francisco for $50 each. They're worth $500,000 right now. And look at Uncle Will. He had ranches till the cows come home. Satisfied? No. He wanted to be a cattle king, a regular Miller and Lux. And when he died he was a night watchman in Los Angeles at $40 a month. There's a spirit of the times, and the spirit of the times has changed. It's all big business now, and we're the small potatoes. Why, I've heard our folks talk of living in the Western Reserve. That was all around what's Ohio now. Anybody could get a farm them days. All they had to do was yoke their oxen and go after it, and the Pacific Ocean thousands of miles to the west, and all them thousands of miles and millions of farms just waiting to be took up. 860 acres. Shucks. In the early days in Oregon they talked 640 acres. That was the spirit of them times, free land, and plenty of it. But when we reached the Pacific Ocean, them times was ended. Big business begun, and big business means big businessmen, and every big businessman means thousands of little men, without any business at all except to work for the big ones. They're the losers, don't you see? And if they don't like it, they can lump it, but it won't do them no good. They can't yoke up their oxen and pull on. There's no place to pull on. China's over there, and in between's a mighty lot of salt water. That's no good for farming purposes. That's all clear enough, Saxon commented. Yes, her brother went on. We can all see it after it's happened, when it's too late. But the big men were smarter, Saxon remarked. They were luckier, Tom contended. Some won, but most lost, and just as good men lost. It was almost like a lot of boys scrambling on the sidewalk for a handful of small change. Not that some didn't have far seeing. But just take your buck, for example. He come of good down east stock, that's got business instinct and can add to what it's got. Now suppose your pa had developed a weak heart, or got kidney disease, or caught rheumatism, so he couldn't go gallivanting and rainbow chasing, and fighting and exploring all over the West. Why, most likely he'd have settled down in San Francisco, he'd have had to, and held on to them three Market Street lots, and bought more lots, of course, and gone into steamboat companies, and stock gambling, and railroad building, and Comstock tunneling. Why, he'd have become big business himself. I know him. He was the most energetic man I ever saw, think quick, as a wink, as cool, as an icicle and as wild, as a Comanche. Why, he'd have cut his way through the free and easy big business gamblers and pirates of them days, just as he cut his way through the hearts of the ladies when he went galloping past on that big horse of his, sword clattering, spurs jingling, his long hair flying, straight as an Indian, clean built and graceful as a blue-eyed prince out of a fairy book and a Mexican caballero all rolled into one. Just as he cut his way through the Johnny Rebs in Civil War days, charging with his men all the way through and back again, and yelling, like a wild Indian, for more. Katie, that help trays you, told me about that. Katie rode with your pa. Why, if your pa had only got laid up in San Francisco, he would have been one of the big men of the West. And in that case, right now, you'd be a rich young woman, traveling in Europe, with a mansion on Nob Hill. Along with the Floods and Crockers, and holding majority stock most likely in the Fairmount Hotel and a few little concerns like it. And why ain't you? Because your pa wasn't smart? No. His mind was like a steel trap. It's because he was filled to bursting and spilling over with the spirit of the times, because he was full of fire and vinegar and couldn't sit down in one place. That's all the difference between you and the young women right now in the Flood and Crocker families. Your father didn't catch rheumatism at the right time, that's all. Saxon sighed, then smiled. Just the same, I've got them beaten, she said. The Miss Floods and Miss Crockers can't marry prize fighters, and I did. Tom looked at her, taken aback for the moment, with admiration, slowly at first, growing in his face. Well, all I got to say, he enunciated solemnly, is that Billy's so lucky he don't know how lucky he is. Not until Dr. Huntley gave the word did the splints come off Billy's arms, and Saxon insisted upon an additional 2 weeks' delay so that no risk would be run. These 2 weeks would complete another month's rent, and the landlord had agreed to wait payment for the last 2 months, until Billy was on his feet again. Salingers awaited the day set by Saxon for taking back their furniture. Also, they had returned to Billy $75. The rest you've paid will be your end, the collector told Saxon. And the furniture's second-hand now, too. The deal will be a loss to Salingers, and they didn't have to do it, either, do you know that? So just remember they've been pretty square with you, and if you start over again don't forget them. Out of the sum, and out of what was realized from Saxon's pretties, they were able to pay all their small bills, and yet have a few dollars remaining in pocket. I hate when things worse than poison, Billy said to Saxon, and now we don't owe a soul in this world except the landlord and Doc Huntley. And neither of them can afford to wait longer than they have to, she said. And they won't, Billy answered quietly. She smiled her approval, for she shared with Billy his horror of debt, just as both shared it with that early tide of pioneers with a Puritan ethic which had settled the West. Saxon timed her opportunity when Billy was out of the house to pack the chest of drawers which had crossed the Atlantic by sailing ship and the plains by ox team. She kissed the bullet hole in it made in the fight at Little Meadow as she kissed her father's sword, the while she visioned him, as she always did, astride his roan war horse. With the old religious awe, she pored over her mother's poems in a scrapbook and clasped her mother's red satin Spanish girdle about her in a farewell embrace. She unpacked the scrapbook in order to gaze a last time at the wood engraving of the Vikings, sword in hand, leaping upon the English sense. Again she identified Billy as one of the Vikings, and pondered for a space on the strange wanderings of the seed from which she sprang. Always had her race been land-hungry, and she took delight in believing she had bred true. For had not she, despite her life passed in a city, found the same land-hunger in her? And was she not going forth to satisfy that hunger, just as her people of old time had done, as her father and mother before her? She remembered her mother's tale of how the promised land looked to them as their battered wagons and weary oxen dropped down through the early winter snows of the Sierras to the vast and flowering sunland of California. In fancy, herself a child of 9, she looked down from the snowy heights as her mother must have looked down. She recalled, and repeated aloud one of her mother's stanzas. Sweet as a wind lute's airy strains, your gentle muse has learned to sing, and California's boundless plains prolong the soft notes echoing. She sighed happily, and dried her eyes. Perhaps the hard times were past. Perhaps they had constituted her plains, and she and Billy had won safely across and were even then climbing the Sierras, ere they dropped down into the pleasant valley land. Salinger's wagon was at the house, taking out the furniture, the morning they left. The landlord, standing at the gate, received the keys, shook hands with them, and wished them luck. "You're going at a trite," he congratulated them. "Sure and wasn't a tundra mural of blankets I tramped into Oakland myself 40 years ago. Buy land, like me, when it's cheap. It'll keep you from the poorhouse in your old age. There's plenty of new towns springin' up. Get in on the ground floor. The work of your hands'll keep you in food and under a roof, and the landlord'll make you well-to-do. And you know me address. When you can spare, send me along that small bit of rent. And good luck. And don't mind what people think. 'Tis them that looks that finds." Curious neighbors peeped from behind the blinds as Billy and Saxon strode up the street, while the children gazed at them in gaping astonishment. On Billy's back, inside a painted canvas tarpaulin, was slung the roll of bedding. Inside the roll were changes of underclothing and odds and ends of necessaries. Outside, from the lashings, depended a frying pan and cooking pail. In his hand he carried a coffee pot. Saxon carried a small telescope basket protected by black oilcloth, and across her back was the tiny ukulele case. "We must look like holy frights," Billy grumbled, shrinking from every gaze that was bent upon him. "It'd be all right if we were going camping," Saxon consoled. "Only we're not." "But they don't know that," she continued. "It's only you know that, and what you think they're thinking isn't what they're thinking at all. Most probably they think we're going camping. And the best of it is we are going camping. We are. We are." At this Billy cheered up, though he muttered his firm intention to knock the block off of any guy that got fresh. He stole a glance at Saxon. Her cheeks were red, her eyes glowing. "Say," he said suddenly, "I seen an opera once where fellows wandered over the country with guitars slung on their backs just like you with that strummy strum. You made me think of them. They was always singin' songs." "That's what I brought it along for," Saxon answered. "And when we go down country roads we'll sing as we go along, and we'll sing by the campfires, too. We're going camping, that's all. Taking a vacation and seeing the country. So why shouldn't we have a good time? Why, we don't even know where we're going to sleep tonight, or any night. Think of the fun. It's a sporting proposition, all right, Billy considered. But, just the same, let's turn off and go around the block. There's some fellows I know, standing up there on the next corner, and I don't want to knock their blocks off.